This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A good Monday to you. Ron Culver out on vacation. I'm Tony D, taking you through this Monday morning. All right, so I guess I got to admit, I was wrong. They got the Olympics underway. Will we make it to closing ceremonies? I don't know, but you know what? They did it. They got it up and running. Now, look, I spent a little time watching the Olympics this weekend. Not too much, but there were enough events for me to absorb. One of the things that I have to say that I like about the Olympics, and Ron and I had talked about this a number of times, there are events that if they were showing you, Tour Stop 8 with this little particular niche sport, I may not be interested in it. But the Olympics, because it's the Olympics, all of a sudden I'm watching it. And whether it's water polo or archery or any of these other kind of sports, synchronized diving, it's sports that you don't see on a normal basis, or you don't really, most of us don't want to see on a normal basis. But every 4 years, they come right to the forefront. So you have that element of the Olympics, which is pretty cool. But then you have the other parts of the Olympics, the sports you do care about and the outcomes that you want to have happen. The United States men's basketball team losing its opener. We'll get to that, to France. Whether or not are they still the gold medal favorites, we'll talk about that as well. And Katie Ledecky, one of the greatest swimmers in United States history, in world history, losing in the 400 meters yesterday. You know, these were the kind of events I think that the Olympics gears towards. There's the swimming, there's the basketball, there's going to be track and field. Those are the premier events. The other ones are kind of fun. And even if the United States isn't particularly good at it or is not meddling in it, it's still fascinating to watch the sport. I thought to myself sometimes when I see the schedule, I go, if it's a sport, do the Olympics just automatically include? I mean, there were so many different sports, and I thought, how can you just have all of these different ones? Like, I didn't realize there was 3-on-3 basketball until it was on my television. And I went, oh, yeah, 3-on-3 basketball is an Olympic sport. What's the qualification for that than the 5-on-5? Like, are somebody more inclined to be better at that than 5-on-5? Or are these the people that couldn't play on the 5-on-5 team? We'll get to the Olympic loss by the men to France and what it means coming up next as Wake Up Call continues on SportsMap Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, thanks for joining us as we continue on a Monday morning. Hope you had a good weekend here on Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. Ron's on vacation in Vail on a baseball tournament as we continue along. So the United States men's basketball team fell to France in the opener. Okay, so look, you can prepare yourself in sports for a lot of things, but when they actually occur, sometimes you're still shocked. All this build up to the Olympics, we watched the vulnerability of the United States men's basketball team, right? Losing these exhibitions, you know, they're not quite cohesive. They're not really playing well. They're still feeling each other out, all of those kind of things. But when you actually get to the Olympics and the opening game is a loss to France and you go, okay, I know France is good. I don't think I'd have Evan Fournier and Rudy Gobert and Nick Batum. And I can see that, you know, they should be pretty in the end, you're still like, wait a minute, but we have Kevin Durant. There's no reason why we should have lost this game. That is what I'm starting to see more and more. There should be a sort of, hey, wake up, guys. Can we come together and win these games at the Olympics? It's all right if you want to lose an exhibition to Australia. That's fine. You want to lose to Nigeria? Fine. Whatever it is. Whoever you're losing to, don't worry about it. It's when you get to Tokyo, then and the Olympics start. Let's get rid of all this rust. Let's get rid of all this we're not really playing together as a team and come up with a strategy to win these games. Now, I've been saying this, you know, when I talk about the Olympic basketball team and sort of giving you the history, you know, I remind you that, you know, the U.S. didn't want this back in the early 90s. When they finally said, fine, you want our pros? You got our pros. But the rest of the world wanted to highlight its players that were in the NBA. But there was always a feeling that down the road, years and years and years, that there would be a talent gap that would shrink and shrink and shrink. But nevertheless, the hard fact of the matter is that the collection of talent that the United States puts out on its court with its NBA players far outweigh any team that could ever produce a similar team. Right? Evan Fournier, Nicola Batum, and Rudy Gobert are good players. But the United States is filled with all NBA players, whereas France is not. And Australia is not. Spain is not. Anybody that's sort of a secondary favorite to win the gold medal, they're not. They don't have a loaded roster. They don't have Drew Holiday coming off the bench to score 18 points. What the United States right now is having trouble with is finding out how to play together, how to come up with a strategy that works to win these games. They're trying to figure it out. I mean, this not only was a loss, this was a bad loss because it wasn't a good look for the U.S. They missed 22 three-point attempts. They took way too many of them. They shot 36% from the floor, right? And France controlled a lot of this game. And so where we can sit back and say in a simplistic way, well, you know, the world is getting better. The world is catching up. Are they really catching up to the point that this should just be these games are up in the air? Like these games are wide open? Yeah, anybody can win. The United States has got Kevin Durant. Sure, why not? Anybody can beat them. Damian Lillard. No, Draymond Green. No, it shouldn't be that way. The U.S. should be winning Olympic basketball games. The competition is getting closer, but it still should be way back to what the U.S. is able to produce. Look, right now, Popovich has got a problem because, again, this is a basketball team that's taken too many threes, and they don't know who should have the ball. And that was the difference with France. France, again, you had Evan Fournier scoring 28 points because the other players on the court of Fournier are building the offense around him. They know what their role is. What's the role of anybody on Team USA? They don't really know. And they're jacking up too many threes. I mean, they're just putting up way too many three-pointers. So this still is a surprise, even if the media narrative is the world is catching up. Because yes, it's getting closer. Yes, it is not the 92 Dream Team where those teams had no business being on the same court, where it was a blowout. It was almost laughable. It was almost to a point where people were suggesting maybe this was a terrible idea. Because the United States not only had won so comfortably, it looked like it would never get to a point where anybody would win. But let's be honest here. This was the first Olympic loss for the men since the Athens game in 2004. Right? So that's a long time. They got their act together after what happened in Athens. Not only did they win golds, they won golds without losing a game. So don't give me the narrative that the world is catching up. Because if the world's not catching up to this level where this is acceptable, then something's wrong with the team and something's wrong with Popovich and something's wrong with these guys who don't know what they're doing when they're on the court together. That being said, is the United States still the favorite to win the gold medal? Of course they are. Of course they are. This is a round, you know, this is group play. When they get into single elimination, right? Well, hopefully we'll see a more cohesive unit on the basketball court. And you know what the other thing is? These guys are going over there to Tokyo. Again, Draymond Green, Damian Lillard, you know, Jason Tatum, you know, Kevin Durant. I mean, the list, right? Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton. I mean, the guys who went over there, they care. You know, one of the things I fight back because I've been in this business a long time. So I've got to meet plenty of athletes over the years, talk to them personally in interviews, talked about things they're passionate about. One of the things that we get us in the media here, those of us who do this for a living, we get lazy. Is we think that because an athlete makes $25 million a year, $30 million a year, $15 million a year, that all their problems, they don't care about anything. They don't care what you think. They don't care about their legacy. They don't care about anything. They got all the money, that's it. And usually people who say that are people who've never had money, right? I've never had $1 million. So I would think if I had it, maybe I would be like, no, I don't need this. I don't need this. I don't need this. I don't need this. But if you're going to Tokyo during the off season of the NBA that just crams 72 games into a short amount of time, especially if you're a player like Devin Booker and whatnot that have gone through and went through the finals, and you're going to Tokyo, you're giving up serious off time. Time to go jet skiing, relaxing, recuperating until you can start training camp again. Those guys want to win a gold medal, and they absolutely do not want to be on a team that didn't. Right, the team in 2004, you know, that's a bad, you know, to go there and just get a bronze medal when you're loaded team. They don't want to go into the Olympics to lose. They care. And right now, they got to figure out how to care enough about what they're giving to their time so that they can play better, so that they can just dominate this thing and win the gold. Look, there are things you cannot buy with money. We've talked about this many times, right? Jerry Jones has all the money in the world. He wants a Super Bowl. You don't just buy that. Steve Ballmer, same thing with the Clippers. All the money that you could ever spend in a lifetime, but he can't just buy the Larry O'Brien trophy. That's why these billionaires seek out different things that they can't just buy off a shelf. And these guys that are playing in the NBA may have these massively lucrative contracts, but they can never buy a gold medal if they've never been on the Olympic team. They can never wear the U.S. jersey if they don't do this. So if they're going to do this, then let them do, they're going to give full effort. They're not lazily walking through this. This is a team with serious problems on the court. This wasn't them just going through the motions, not caring because they're wealthy. And just, you know, whatever. You know, you're not agreeing to do this if you're going to go over there and give 70%. All right? This was a loss that should be a wake-up call to this basketball team and to Popovich as to we've got to figure out an identity. You know, I have found this run of probably from 88, right, the 88 Olympics in Seoul, to now, when it comes to the men's basketball team in the Olympics, a fascinating journey. I think again, a 30 for 30 documentary should be on it. Not just the Dream Team, they've done that, but I mean from the point of the 88 Olympic Games, the last time we had college basketball players representing us, to why we have the Dream Team in 92, what were the circumstances, to what the United States teams were and how they dealt with it all the way through, dominating in Atlanta, right? You know, dominating what was after Atlanta to Sydney, right? And then getting to 2004 in Athens and whoops, what happened there? And then this sort of collective unifying belief by a lot of the NBA players that we'll never let this happen again. You know, Kobe Bryant leading the way in Beijing, right? To what we have now, where look at the rosters of these teams and you'll see this incredible NBA talent that's spread out around the globe. I think to me, a fascinating period of time for one particular sport in how it's evolved. What the predictions were, what people thought were, and what in 2021 we have now. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. You can even hit Ron Culver up, at Ron Culver, with Ron, that's Ron with two N's. All right, coming up, we'll get more into the Olympic Games coming up throughout the show, but with the NFL right around the corner, I have to share one really funny yet disturbing meme that I saw about Tom Brady. That's next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call on Sportsnet Radio. All right, again, we'll get a little bit more into the Olympic Games, but I want to get to this Tom Brady meme. But before we do that, have a car problem but don't know where to go? Maybe you're not close to home when your car breaks down. Let O'Reilly Auto Parts help. With O'Reilly Auto Parts' shop referral program, take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. Click Find a Repair Shop to find a reparable repair facility or service center for your repairs. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, so I got to tell you, look, I think memes are funny. I don't put a lot of, you know, I don't use them a lot. I know I have friends on social media who use them all the time. I think they're funny. Some of them are super clever. And remember when Brady went to Tampa and, you know, people were like, oh, you know, he's going to Tampa. You know, what will happen? What, you know, we were kind of questioning, will he be good? You know, he's going to be separate from Belichick. He is getting older. And he goes on to win the Super Bowl. But even leading up to the Super Bowl, I remember saying to people, look, this guy, for whatever reason, even on a new team, he's just not liked, right? He's just not, you know, people, they say, that, you know, we root for winners, but we don't always root for winners, right? So I saw this meme, and I have to tell you, this is the most, it's the most savage thing I think I've ever seen. So it's a picture of Brady, and he's holding up all of his hands, and he's holding up all seven of his championship rings, right? So he's got three fingers that don't have rings on them. So the person who created this, for each finger that doesn't have a ring, they put an L. One of them says Nick Foles, the other says Eli Manning, and the other one says Eli Manning. On the rings, one says Spygate. The other says D. Ford. Remember the Kansas City player that went off sides? The other one, the Buccaneers ring, Bucks defense. Another ring, Tuck rule. Another ring, Pats defense. Another ring, Falcons choked. And the other ring, the last ring, Malcolm Butler. Now, I found this humorous, but at the same time, I thought it was interesting. Because once again, here is an individual in our time that is doing something we've never seen before, and yet it's almost as if most people would really enjoy seeing this. This wasn't a meme that people were like, oh, this is, you know, very rude, inappropriate, you know, little sore losers. I think a lot of people around the country would see this and go, yeah, that's exactly right. And that to me is kind of too bad. I said, look, I don't understand why we're not looking at a 43-year-old quarterback that is going in. He is going into this upcoming season the favorite to repeat. Come on. Let's process that for a second. I mean, the youth movement that is coming in the sport, and yet the 43-year-old quarterback, it's going to be 44, is the favorite to repeat as Super Bowl champion. A lot of it is because his team around him is great. A lot of it is because he's got a lot of weapons. He went to the right team. He didn't go to an absolute trash football team and have to rebuild it from scratch. He went to a team that was looking for that one extra quarterback. Oh, like Jameis Winston wasn't quite the guy, turned the ball over too many times, but man, that team was ready to explode. That's where he went. But why don't we appreciate, even if it's not our team, even if he beat us along the way, to just pull back a second? How come he didn't get sort of the Tiger Woods treatment, right? Now, maybe it is because of a number of things, and a team sport is different than an individual sport. Totally understand that. But sometimes with dominance, we like it to a point, and then we go, too much, right? And I think that's always been the case with this guy. When in reality, I do believe that many people, especially young people, who are at this age where they don't appreciate what this quarterback has done going to 10 Super Bowls and winning 7, but they will, when they're much older, talking to another generation that never saw him play. That tends to happen in sports. Well, you may not like a guy, you may not respect a guy, you may not even appreciate an individual, but years later you go, man, that guy was the best I've ever seen. And a lot of it is just possessive, generational type of thing. My time was the best. We hear it all the time in the NBA, right? All the time, right? I think the whole Michael Jordan, LeBron James debate is generational. right? I think that there is a whole argument that is really mostly based on a lot of it's one of the reasons The Last Dance was so popular, because it reiterated what a lot of people from the 90s generation remembered about those Bulls team. You know, a lot of people can't really remember specific details, but they just knew, right? If you talk to somebody who grew up in the 90s and you said, who's better, LeBron or Michael? And they go, Michael. Then why? And you're like, I don't know. When I just watched Michael, it was different. When I watched him play, it was different. You know, they may not be a stat person. They may not be even a huge sports fan. They just knew that whenever they watched the Bulls and whenever they watched the Bulls in the playoffs, it was different. And The Last Dance comes around and you're like, yeah, it was. This confirms everything that I had always believed about that era, about that time, about this guy and that team. Brady, I think, could get that years down the road. I mean, look, I posted it on my social media page and I had a lot of people laugh at this. And I had a lot of people make comments, anti-Brady comments on this. But it sort of was like an experiment for me just to find out if people were like, this is really sour grapes. This guy's amazing. No, it was, oh, no, this is cool. But I'm telling you right now, when he's done and he's retired, maybe there's this window of like 10 years. There'll be another quarterback that will come along. Maybe he doesn't win 7 out of 10, but, you know, he's doing really well. He's got 4 or 5. And right, there'll be a conversation about his ability. He'll be able to do different things that Brady couldn't do, you know, played on different kind of teams than Brady did. And there'll be a little bit, it always happens, a little bit of sort of, you know, tampering down the legacy of a past champion to elevate the legacy of the current guy that's doing it. And those of us from the generation of remembering what this was, we'll just scream, no, 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 no. I really didn't like it when he kept beating my team in the playoffs, but my God, nobody did it better. I think I got a feeling that this is going to happen for a lot of people who don't like him today, but they will down the road. Now, Jordan was different. I mean, I don't remember anybody in the 90s not liking Jordan. Like, I don't remember. I think it was one of those things you could like Jordan, but also like the team. Even if he was beating your team pretty badly, you could just sort of go, this is the best guy. I mean, this guy's different. You know, like, if you're a Phil Mickelson fan like I am, Tiger Woods just sort of crushed a lot of the majors that Phil would be, you know, probably have in his mantle today. But you couldn't help but just admire and appreciate and like what Tiger was doing for golf and what he was doing for this legacy, this time, this period of time. But I just thought it was kind of funny. It's impressive. I think that to have this, though, is another testament to what he's been able to accomplish, right? I mean, yeah, you can nitpick at little different things, right? Dee Ford, Buccaneers defense. Like, the Buccaneers defense is funny to me because it's like Bucs defense. Yeah, they kept Kansas City out of the end zone, but the guy did throw 4 touchdowns and won the MVP. I mean, come on. Tuck rule is an interesting one to me. Tuck rule is always, it's always been, I know I've said this before, sort of the sports butterfly effect. Like, if you could go back in time and convince the officials that it was a fumble, it wasn't a tuck rule, it was a fumble, and the Raiders had the ball, what exactly would have happened? I mean, I know Belichick kind of liked Brady, and maybe they still would have parted ways with Drew Bledsoe. Who knows? But I wonder how that organization would have been if that was just Raiders ball, Raiders win, Patriots go into the offseason on a snowy day in Foxborough. What happens to him? What happens to the organization? Because the trajectory bolted, you know, after that Super Bowl. They missed that season the next season, but then won, beat Carolina and beat the Eagles in Super Bowl 38 and 39. All right, we'll continue along in his wake-up call. Hit me up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's. More on the NFL coming up as we continue along on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Do you know preseason football is coming up soon? August 5th, Steelers and Cowboys. I'm not a huge preseason guy. I never have been. Attended too many of them. Barely remember them. Don't really care. I'm not one of those, you know, I think there was this, like, there's a lot of people who go, I like to see how my team looks. You're not getting anything. Like, you're not really getting anything. Trust me. I know you're not. You can pretend like you're an armchair scout, you know, like how a rookie looks in a preseason game. But come on, you know, you got to get to the regular season. Now, I said this before. I know the preseason is three because now we have 17 games on the schedule, and the preseason is just three now. I'm sure people are happy, but I've always said I don't really care how many games the NFL plays in preseason. One, three, five, six. I don't care. As long as the season starts when it's supposed to. Right? You got Labor Day weekend for college football, and then the Thursday after Labor Day weekend, NFL kicks off that day, and then it goes into that weekend. As long as you get me there, I don't care what you do up until that point. I don't care if you have training camp for 3 months. I don't care if you have it for 2 weeks. I don't care if you have it for a week and a half. I don't care if you have it for 2 days. As long as you feel like you're ready to go when we got kickoff Thursday and into that weekend. That's up to you. The only thing I'm mad about, and I'm glad, you know, I want this changed, is if you're a season ticket holder, you shouldn't pay full price for preseason games. It's the only thing I've said is concerning. But, you know, because people are like, four preseason games, that's too many. What do you care? It's August. What do you do? I mean, what do you care? What do you want? One? I mean, if a coach tells me he needs seven, I'll give him seven. As long as we're not starting the season in October, I don't care how many preseason games they play. I don't care how many joint practices they have. I think training camp, though, if you're an NFL fan, you got to make a pilgrimage to your team's training camp at least once in your lifetime. I do think you have to do that. I've never seen the Steelers at training camp, so I have to make the trip, but I've covered too many training camps. I think though, I covered the Broncos for 10 seasons. So about this time a year, we would go down. Mike Shanahan used to have a barbecue. So he would do this barbecue thing and then you'd got to ask him questions and then we get to eat and it would be, you know, eat food and then open up training camp and then you'd go. I was never one for going down to observe practice. Just sitting around watching practice. I would go for like an hour. I kept the things I want to see, but I was really there to ask questions. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get a story. I wanted to do an interview. That's what I was there for. I wasn't evaluating the offensive line on day two of camp. But the one camp that if I had to go to that I'd want to see is the Dallas Cowboys in Oxnard, California. Because Dak Prescott is going into full workouts. He even participated in an 11-on-11 drill. He's coming off that severe ankle injury, the one that was almost ripped his foot off in week 5 against the Giants. And he's coming back from that, and he is healthy, and they expect him to be a full participant. Now, if I was covering the Cowboys, or I was just on my way around the country in the good old US of A, that's where I would stop. That's where I would be. He's expected to play in the preseason, but not expected to play in the Hall of Fame game. But that is someone I'd pay attention to. Why? Because that's what I want to know, right? If you've got a player, like the Steelers drafted Najee Harris, I'm excited for it, right? I remember telling you guys on draft day as a Steeler fan that, yeah, I was looking at offensive line, right? And I was like, but when the opportunity came to get like this fun, skilled player from Alabama, I was all in. I was like, you know what? Go for it. Go for it. You need other things. Get them somewhere else. Grab this kid. It'll be a blast. It'll be great. But if I watch him in the preseason, I can't make a real assessment on how he'll look in the regular season. But at Dak Prescott, now I'm paying attention to his feet. How's his footwork? How is he in the pocket? Yep, it's a different rush. It's different defense. I get that. But athletically, how does he look? How does he fare? Right? I don't think you put a lot of stock in young quarterbacks in preseason. If you've drafted a young quarterback and he's playing in a game or two, you know, if you got Justin Fields, if you got Zach Wilson and he throws two touchdowns against a B defense, that doesn't tell you anything. But what you want to see is the sort of elements of the athletic ability in that position, right? Hey, how's he doing on the reads? How is his throws? Do they look sharp? Do they look tight? Yeah, it's going in a window that's going to be way tighter when he plays against the A team, the real starters on the defense and the real defenders on the defense. But how is he threading that window? Those are the things that you kind of look at in terms of the preseason. But I think the one thing that the NFL does, I think it's better than any other sport, is that it makes you feel like a lot of this stuff is really important, even though you kind of know it isn't until you get to the regular season, right? They make out that camp, what's going on in camp, how does the team look, how does the team look in preseason? That's different than spring training in baseball, right? Or even, some preseason games in the NBA. I don't think preseason in baseball ever says to its baseball fan, you need to be paying attention to this because there are going to be signs that are going to lead you to see how this team in March in Arizona is going to do in 162 game season all through the summer months and into the fall. I don't think that's a logical thing to say if you're Major League Baseball. Right? Yeah, come down, see the Mets play in Port St. Lucie, and you'll get a good feel of what the team will look like when they get up to New York to start the season in April. That's not a realistic expectation. You go to spring training in baseball, you go to enjoy the sunshine that's not in your particular area in the wintertime. You go for the warmth, you go for the palm trees, you go for the cactuses, you go for baseball, there's like a whole vacation element to spring training that's where it's marketed. Right? Now the NBA, before COVID, they would play their preseason games in all sorts of like cities around the country that didn't have NBA. I mean, you could get the Denver Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns playing in North Dakota, right? Or something like that. But the NFL does it differently. Here's camp. Here are the dates. Come down and watch. See your team. Prepare for the upcoming season. See them get ready. See things in August in these preseason games to evaluate. And I think it does it much differently than any other sport. And that's a real testament to the way the NFL has marketed itself. Look, how many of you, if you're old enough to remember sort of a time where when the NFL was over, like this is when I was a kid, this is what it would be like. It was the NFL season, you'd get the Super Bowl, then you'd get the Pro Bowl in Hawaii. And that was like your last bit of football, right? So you'd watch the Pro Bowl in Hawaii. And sometimes they would do like, ABC, I think, did like kind of like a Battle of the Network Stars type of show where like two of the Super Bowl teams would compete in like different events, like tug of war and stuff like that. But then it would disappear for a while, right? Combine wasn't on TV. Heck, when I was a kid, the draft wasn't on TV. The draft was in the paper, right? But then as the NFL started to grow and started to say, all right, you like the 16-game season and the Super Bowl? You'll like this too. You'll like this. And they started putting more and more things on TV. Now, this is a league that has said, here are all of our events, and every one of them matters, and it's important. And if you're a true fan, you follow it along from the combine to the draft to training camp to preseason, all of that leading up to it, right? Because you got fantasy teams to put together. You've got betting to put together. So you're going to want as much of this information as you possibly can. So, again, if I'm looking around the country, I would say there's two camps I would go to. There's two right now. It's probably more as the season kind of, we get sort of tightening up things and getting ready. There's two I would go to. I would go to Dallas. I'd want to see Dak Prescott. But then I'd want to go to Green Bay just to see if Aaron Rodgers does show up. And what do they do when he doesn't show up? I just want to soak into that drama as much as I possibly can. All right, coming up next, more on the Oklahoma-Texas departure of the Big 12 to the SEC. Will it happen? How can the Big 12 stop it? What will that conference look like if they do? That's all coming up next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life. Rocket can. What is this I'm reading? That Luka Doncic had 48 points in the game Slovenia beat Argentina? Isn't Argentina supposed to be good? I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. That's the one thing about the Olympic Games. I don't know who's supposed to be awesome outside of the U.S. I have to take their word for it. I said this at the top of the hour. I love when people are like, well, this really isn't that big of a surprise that France... Come on. Like, stop doing this. It is a shock. Yes, it is a shock. You know what it is? It's like in golf, right? That you have, like, somebody you've never heard of and they're leading a major, right? Like Ben Curtis. Ben Curtis won the 2003 British Open. I'd never heard of him. But it was at Royal St. George's. And at the afterwards... All the golf pundits who know more about it than you or I do, they're like, well, this isn't really a surprise. He's an up-and-coming American golfer. Yeah, it is a surprise. Like, just don't try to sugarcoat this. Yes, it is. Yeah, France is good. The United States should be better. Yeah, Luka Doncic drops 48. Maybe that gives Slovenia a boost, but the U.S. should be better. Don't pretend like they're on the same level. Like they have dropped that far down. Losing like they did is a problem. It's a problem that they need to fix. If they want to win the gold medal, they will fix it. All right. Texas and Oklahoma, the Big 12 met with both schools. It looks like this is going to happen. I can't imagine the Big 12 could offer anything to both schools that would convince them to stick around in the Big 12. If they can leave and the votes come in from the SEC, they are going to leave. The SEC needs 11 schools to vote in Texas and Oklahoma. They will get that. I got to think, even when Texas A&M saying no here, I got to tell you this. I believe Texas A&M and Missouri saying no are like, you know, we're going to say no because it'll show on the record we said no, but in the end we know it's going to be cool for everybody to make that kind of money. Like, we just want to tell our fans we didn't vote for this, but we know it's going to pass anyway, and we get like that free vote. It's like, you see this in Congress a lot. Like, there's a bill and it's going to pass, but some people go, nah, I'll vote no on it anyway, just to make sure my constituents know that I didn't vote for this. But I know it's going to pass. We're going to get that budget through or whatever it is. Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC is a big, you know, is obviously one of the big stories in college football in a off season that has just been littered with these kind of changes. Now, when would it happen? I don't know. I'm assuming in a year or two they'll wrap it up and move over to the SEC. And what will the SEC look like? There's people talking about four conferences with four teams, and I like that. That's kind of a cool idea. But if you're going to go like this, I think if you are these other conferences, it's time to start making some phone calls and start pairing up, right? And it's not just like the ACC joining the Big Ten. Forget it. How about the AAC? Just going, all right, fine, let's merge with the Big 12. Or let's take you know, some other of these conferences that are good, but you know, not quite Power 5, and just throw them all in together. Because that's where we're going with this. For once, I would love for a legitimate argument on these kind of decisions that has nothing to do with money. Right? It's like, well, why would Texas and Oklahoma join the SEC? Money. Why would the SEC want Texas and Oklahoma? Money. I would love a more sports-oriented argument. I'd love a more sports-oriented discussion, but that's not the case here. This is hundreds of millions of dollars we're talking about that is getting divvied up. The SEC is swimming in a pool of Scrooge McDuck money, and these schools would love a piece of that. Especially if you're a program that can bring your own level of, you know, huge brand to the program, right? Like you're Texas, Oklahoma too, but Texas. Remember, it's not just football, but it's close to, you know, almost entirely football decision. But you know what? Basketball, there'll be implications of this. Other sports, there'll be implications of this. It's just some of the stuff we don't pay attention to, but football is at the core of everything. I mean, I was mentioning it last week. You know, the Big East was one of my favorite conference growing up as a kid, and the Big East just doesn't have the same punch anymore because Syracuse had to leave because of football. Right? Boston College left because of football. right? It's that important. But, you know, imagine if you're Kansas and you're, and you know, look, football stinks, but our basketball team is one of the premier teams in the country. Well, do we need the Big 12? No. So what are we doing sticking around with this? Right? Look, okay, our football team isn't attractive. In fact, it's really lousy. But our basketball team is worthy of something. Why are we swimming in this 8-team pool for a bit? I think if you're the Big 12, there's nowhere else. Like, who, what fish are you going to bring into the conference to get it back up? Right? I mean, Houston seems to be a good option. Maybe South Florida, right? Maybe Central Florida, get them out of the AAC. But are you going to be nabbing a big, big program? Are you going to snag Nebraska again? No, you're not. So what do you do if you're the conference? If you're Bob Bowlesley, well, what do you do? I mean, how do you save the thing that is being decimated in front of your eyes? How do you save it? How do you make it viable? How do you make it so that the member institutions that are around are like, oh, good, South Florida, thanks. Tampa market's not bad, but boy, it would be nice to get one of those Texas kind of schools. Oh, there isn't any around anymore? Great. Wake up call, Sports Map Radio.